All for coming back for the second and the last lecture of the second week of the Freiburg New Church Assembly. Today is August 20th, second lecture. My name is Susanna Curry. Well, I've been coming to Freiburg for about 15 years now, and I think I've been lecturing for the past seven, and I feel very honored to have gotten the slot where I get the last word. I think that must have been something I had to work up to. And actually, part of what I'd like to say as a final word on the topic of charity is to bring us back to the very first lecture, the lecture that where Ken revealed that it came as quite a shock to him to realize that the first work of charity is to shun evils and to look within, to take responsibility individually for how we act in the world, and that our charity is not charity unless it is fully inspired by love and guided by wisdom. And the first thing I'd like to just go to is that definition of charity. And just because sometimes we have to be very clear on how we're using a word, what I'd like to remind us of is we're very good at understanding that it takes love and wisdom combined to inspire use, that these are intricately and indistinguishably one. We can talk about love and wisdom separately and how they inspire use, but we can't separate them, just like we can't separate from a candle flame the heat and the light and the burning activity. We can't separate them, but we can talk about them separately. And it's the same thing charity and faith, and I want to thank Lee for emphasizing the word that I'd like to use for our part in manifesting God's uses is the word service. We frequently confuse the charity, which is the intention, which is the love-inspired motivation for service, by calling service charity, that we actually, what we do. But what we do is the service in the world. It's inspired by the charity we feel in our hearts as guided and manifested by the faith and the ideas that inform our faith, our beliefs. So just wanted to put that out there, that this is God's part. God's part is to inspire in us from the ultimate expression of love and wisdom, how to be useful. Heart is to open ourselves to being charitable in our hearts, being faithful, and acting in service. So that's how I'm using the word charity, and I wanted to just clarify that first. As we talk often about how love is primary, we can see that if charity is the human manifestation of love, it becomes a primary part of us. It's central to our being. And this is where we can actually better understand how we talked earlier in the week about being charity. We're not being service. We're doing service, but we're being charity because it lives within us. From the Archina, speaking generally, there is only one doctrine, namely the doctrine of charity. For all things of faith regard charity. Between charity and faith, there is no other difference than between willing what is good and thinking what is good. He who wills what is good also thinks what is good. However, the reverse is not always the case. He who thinks what is good does not always will what is good. And that's an important reminder. We have all had experiences of that, and I'd like to just refer a moment to think about someone that you've met in your life who is incredibly skillful. The first people I think of in this category would be fundraising professionals. They're really good at what they do. But are they raising the money for the good works that you think you're paying the money to, or are they raising money for themselves? That's always a question, and it's one of the ways in which we discern how we give our money is, do I trust the intentions of these professionals? They're doing excellent work, their service is happening, their understanding of how to do it is very high, but what is their intention? What is the charity that lives within? And then on the reverse of that, and I'm just kind of going to extremes, not all fundraising professionals are manipulative and self-serving, obviously. There are many who do good in the world. On the other hand, the person that you run across, perhaps this is even sort of an example of a small child, all the best of intentions, all the best, absolutely no idea how to manifest them. Clumsy as all get out. Somebody that comes running up to you, you know, I really, really want to feed the poor, and I made this huge pot of spaghetti. Who do I give it to? You know, they just don't know how to do it, but the intention is good. And so it's kind of a reminder of these two extremes. Where do we feel God most? It's when the charity, when the heart is engaged in the person and they're trying to act from that. Understanding can grow. Understanding can be informed. But charity has to be there first. From the little book called Charity, there cannot exist a grain of spiritual faith apart from charity. Since charity is the life, soul, and essence of faith. Such as the charity is, such is the faith. And the faith that precedes charity is a faith of cognitions, which is historical faith, in itself a knowing. So before we look at more about how charity works and how it works in the world, and the title for today's lecture was given as the gift, charity is the gift that keeps on giving. But before we look at how it gives, what that gift is, we need to look at and be honest in ourselves about what does it say about our faith. Our charity is the evidence of our faith. And our faith is, if it is based simply on knowing, on, it's a historical faith, a faith of cognitions, that's simply a faith that precedes charity. It's not the full, complete faith, as Lee was mentioning, the complete faith, charity, the distinguishably one faith, charity, and service that we aspire to. We aspire to having that entire dynamic combination fully inspired by God through love, through spiritual use, and through wisdom into us so that we can act charitably from a faith that is inspired by that charity, not simply knowing. So this is where Ken had his dilemma in the very first lecture, that it lifts up our responsibility to reflect upon how we understand our faith. Do we understand that the charity we feel within is the essence of our faith? It is the life, soul, and essence of our faith. From the Arcana, Swedenborg wrote, that man believes that he is reformed and regenerated through the truth of faith, but this is only an appearance. He is reformed and regenerated through the good of faith, that is, through charity toward the neighbor and love to the Lord. This is a really big wake-up call. I had to ponder all week on it after Ken's lecture on Monday. Because it means that we really have to look within, shun the evils, and then do the good. And the other issue for me, when I really reflected upon this essence of charity, is we need to not just feel, well, I want to do good. That it's, I want to do good to others. I want to love, who do I want to love? I want to love the Lord. That we need to focus on how we're going to manifest this charity in service. And one of the key questions brought up this week that I'd like to go back to just a moment is, who is this neighbor we're supposed to express charity to? Who is the neighbor? Swedenborg wrote that it has been made known to me by much experience that there are people saved from every religion, provided that through the life of charity they have received the remains of good and apparent truth. And from the Doctrine of Faith, the universal of the Christian faith on the part of man is that he believes in the Lord, for through believing in him there is effected conjunction with him, by which comes salvation. To believe in him is to have confidence that he will save. And as no one can have this confidence except one who lives aright, therefore this also is meant by believing in him. For me, this really opens up the question of who is the neighbor. Because we are called to love the good in the neighbor, not indiscriminately, not to love and pass out bowls of spaghetti everywhere without knowing who might need it and how is the best use for the loving feelings that we have, but to love the good in the other. And in this particular passage from the Doctrine of Faith, Swedenborg is saying that anyone who has confidence that God will save, that any person who has a basic trust in God and who lives aright, this also is meant by believing in him. And this opens up our concept of neighbor to all people of faith, all people in the Lord's universal church all over the world. Now, beyond that, even people of ill will, when we can find the good in them, the amount and the way to serve through our service, the good in them to help, certainly they are meant by the neighbor also. But the way in which sometimes we separate out those who are of faith and those who are not, being strictly identified to religious affiliation, I feel that it's time for that to go. It is seriously time for us to recognize that many people who are unchurched have a deep trust that there is a God and that God is guiding them in some way. They do not use our same language. They do not use our same terms. I have a very close friend who is a Sufi. She is a deep woman of faith. I do not ascribe to her method of religious practice, but I respect that she trusts God and believes that God is the saving power of the universe. I'd like to tell a story in memory of a very good woman, and I was reminded of her story and reminded of the Bible passage in Matthew that we heard this morning about the woman with the alabaster box, and who of all good intentions was giving what she had in the best way she knew how. And Jesus recognized that and said that this story should be told in memory of her. She may not have understood any of his teachings. We don't know. We don't know if she was a follower or if someone that just came along who heard that he was a good man, but she was inspired to give. And when I lived here in Maine, before we moved, I had a neighbor for 12 years. Her name was Terry. And Terry was a good woman. Now, she was a cafeteria lady at the high school. She served the kids. She was good-natured. And she took in animals who needed homes and found them and helped them to find new homes. And she came down with liver cancer in her late 30s. She died within 3 months of the diagnosis. And when I went to visit her when she was dying, she asked me, how do I know I'm going to go to heaven? How can I know? She was brought up Catholic, but she had not been a practicing Catholic for many years. And I asked her a few questions. I said, Terry, have you lived your life and enjoyed it and enjoyed the people you've been with? She said, oh, yes. I said, you know, haven't you loved all those kids you served at the high school? Oh, yes, I've loved every minute of it. I said, and how do you feel about your family? Oh, I love my husband. I love my boys. And how do you feel about all the animals that you've rescued over the years? Oh, they've been wonderful. I have loved them. I said, Terry, that is the life that leads to heaven. All that love that you shared in the world, that is the life that leads to heaven. She lived a life of charity, faith, and service, and she never conceptualized it. She never thought about it until her dying that she even had a concern about heaven. But it's about how we live and how we are. She was the being of charity that I always remember, and which is why I feel so inspired by that Bible passage. It's, if Jesus says to share this story as a memorial, I think that that's the most fitting memorial any of us could ever want, that when we're gone, someone will remember the charity that we lived and shared. And this is why charity is a gift. It is not just a gift from God to us. It is a gift from each of us to each other. When we are living charity, when we are finding ways to accept God's love and express it in service with a growing understanding and a growing, perhaps, consciousness of how this is faith, we may or may not ever verbalize that, but do we need to? if we are living that life. Because we are regenerated and enlightened by living charity. It is what purifies our being. Because as we are living and being charity, we naturally shun evils. We naturally do goods. It's what we're inspired to do. And the words are simple. The work is hard, as Reuben reminded us earlier this week. It is simple to say, shun evils and do good. It is a daily walk with God to do so. But the Lord knows how hard it is for us. So this gift that we're given, this ability to aspire to living a life of charity, to being a blessing, comes to us accommodated. It's accommodated to what we can get, what we can hear, what we can experience. And it is enhanced. We have been given an avenue through which to learn more about it. We can pray, we can listen, and we can live. I know I mentioned earlier about my daughter Grace teaching me a lot about being charitable to rude drivers and slow storekeepers and all the people that I would tend to maybe get a little impatient with. She's constantly reminding me, this is God's child too. When we feel frustration, when we feel uncharitable, if we pray about that, right there in the moment, you know, the count to 10, the, you know, take a deep breath, all the advice people give you, it's to get in touch with the charitable self that lives within us all. It's already in there. It's God's connection with us. We just choose to overlook it, plow through it, say sayonara, walk past it. But it's in us. It's in every one of us. When we pray and we listen, we can live the life of charity. But we will all receive it in a variety of levels and combinations, and this is as it should be because we are all different. President of our church, Pete Brackman, has a very easy reminder for himself of every time he wants to open his mouth, he asks three questions. Is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? If we asked ourselves those three questions a little more often, probably experience a little more silence than we do at the moment. But remembering, is it true or is it just my opinion that I want to share? Is it necessary? Perhaps is it necessary right in this moment? There might be indeed something necessary to say, but maybe not right this moment. And is it kind? Am I being sensitive to the other person's experience? And I was trying to think of a good example of this, and all I could think of was with the time I tried to plant a garden. Now, I had no experience in gardening at all, but I had a really nice backyard, and I got loan of a rototiller, and I rototilled out a nice little garden plot, and I put the seeds in. Well, you see, when the seeds are going in is when the leaves haven't quite come out yet. So the tree that was to the side of the garden looked like it was going to stay on its side of the garden. But when the leaves came in, it shaded it. Now, I would have found that out when the leaves came in, and I would have learned a lesson. But while I'm in the middle of the sweat and the rototilling and the planting, my neighbor had to come over and say, you know, that's never going to work. You're right under the tree. That's never going to work. What a disaster. Yes, it was true. Yes, it was necessary for me to learn that. But was it kind? In the moment, I was pretty angry, both at myself and the person for pointing it out to me. It would have been nice to at least get a good night's sleep thinking I'd done a good job and then find out the error of my ways later. But we need to let each other learn our own lessons. We do need to give each other space to do that. That's charitable. Sometimes, you know, I mean, if it's of vital importance and all those things are true, it's true, necessary, kind, and I need to do it right now, by all means. We are here to help one another. That's part of charity as well. But I would propose that we say a little too much, a little too often, to tell other people what's right. And we could be more charitable, every one of us. So charity is a gift. The question is, how are we going to offer it to one another? The Lord offers it to us completely personalized to our needs, completely accommodated to our abilities. How are we going to pass the gift along? One way in which we pass this gift, which the way that charity keeps on giving to us is it humbles us. It humbles us daily through the experience of reflection on our own process with other people. Have we been truthful? Has our input been necessary? And have we been kind? Have we prayed about our difficult situations, listened to the Lord's guidance, and have we lived with what we, the messages that we've heard? So charity serves our regeneration. It helps us to constantly look at ourselves and ask the Lord's guidance to do course corrections. It also serves the creation of heaven on earth, because as we are giving to one another, as we are inspired by God's love to be charity and act in ways of service, we are like a pebble in a pond affecting people beyond our ability to see. We are doing kindness to someone who may not have had a kindness done to them, and then they turn around and they do another kindness to someone else. And we inspire others to live and be charity as well, because we are, as Christ was, servant leaders. We are leading by example. We are serving one another. And I got to tell you that when you allow the gift of charity to run through your very lifeblood, you are following your bliss, and that is love in action. And it is a self-perpetuated regeneration. You just, when you do something you love and it affects another person and you see the wonderful effect in their lives, you are so inspired by that, you continue to and are enhanced in your ability to give more. But I don't want to leave this week with simply us talking about charity, how it works, how we could do better at it. I mean, that's why we go to church every Sunday. We need to be reminded all the time. But I think we need to do a little bit more work than just be reminded, because each of us, and we've heard this term a lot, we all come with our own baggage. You know, we come with our past, our history, our experiences, our ways that we've related to different things in our lives, how that makes us relate to the present. We come with what's I consider our unconscious baggage. Well, I think it's time we packed our own bag. Okay, so this is a bag. Perhaps you might want to have some of these things with you. Maybe you won't. But this is the bag that I packed that I want to take with me. And it's full of tools. These are my, evil shunners and good doers. A few tools to take with you. And this is a reminder that everyday things can teach us and remind us of what we need in life to be alert. The first thing I packed in here is, this is my discernment assistant kit. We all need a little help with discernment. So, you know, maybe the first thing when we're looking at ourselves, we want to shun the evils that are in there. We need some glasses that magnify just a bit because, you know, we kind of see those evils as rather small. So we want to magnify them, make them a little larger so we can pay better attention and see what we need to work on. Although when we get to things that are truthful, we might need the dark glasses because sometimes they're a little too bright. We don't want to see what we've found inside. So we have to pack our dark glasses. And then sometimes this brings up so many feelings that we have to wade through, we might need the goggles. Because the feelings that are brought up by recognizing the evils that are within are real, and we need to deal with them. And finally, after we've magnified and we've seen the brightness and we've waded through a lot of feelings, but we still see all the evils as out there, then we put on the mask and look within, because they're in here. They're not simply out there in the world around us. So discernment of the evils that we need to face is our repentance. That's our beginning of our stage of repentance. And we really are served by taking a close look. So in whatever way you pack your discernment assistant kit, I invite you to take a good look, deal with the feelings it brings up, and know that you're doing your part. You're enhancing your faith. You're allowing charity to really grow in you. Now, the next thing that I've packed in my, this is part of my evil shunners kit, is my confessional or witness box. This is where it says, instructions are, leave judgments here, also self-righteousness and intellectual pride, and help yourself to humility. So when we see the evils around us and we start to point to where, well, they're over there and they're over there, frequently the things we see in others are the things we are actually seeing in ourselves. But to truly live a life of charity, we need to put the judgments aside. We need to put them, we need to put a lid on them, basically. We need to put them aside and maybe bring them out to look at why I have that judgment. Why is it that, I'm really holding on to this intellectual pride or this self-righteousness? Why do I have this in my little baggage? This is probably one you have a full load of this in your unconscious baggage. We're just saying, put it consciously in a box. And this is when we need to remind ourselves that the reason we put judgments away is to see that everyone is God's child. There is good in everyone. There truly is. So this is the little witness box. And another part of the why I called it a witness box is that it's where you actually say to yourself, okay, this is who I am, and this is what I think, and this is how I feel. I need to witness to myself all that's going on inside of me, so that I can then put it aside. And then once we've done some of that, now a lot that's going on in our minds, you know, we need to deal with it every day. So we need a good shampoo. This is Maximum Strength Therapeutic Shampoo. This is to really get, and it says right on it, controls the symptoms of self-interest, self-importance, disrespect, and inattention to others. Use daily. Apply liberally to your head. Work into a lather. Let's sit at least 5 minutes. For stubborn cases, massage gently into scalp. Rinse, and a refreshing tingling sensation is normal. We need this kind of therapy. We need it frequently because we keep slipping back. We keep slipping back. And then there's also this really small travel shampoo that you can pack. And this is, this is shampoo. It's a sham, as opposed, this is the real poo. And this is real regeneration poo. And the instructions on this are very simple. Repent, rinse, repeat. And finally, this last one in my little evil shunners kit. I have enough to share these. You know how you tie a string around your finger to remember something? Well, these are little elastics. And these are called reminders. Helps you to remember what's going on in your head. And here's what it's to remind you of. And you put them on a finger, and then when you need to be reminded, just snap it. Just snap it. And this is what it's to tell you. And I'll pass these around so you can have one. Have one or two. There's a bunch. They are to remind you, it's not all about me. They're to remind you, how would I feel if this were me when you're dealing with another person? Why did God put me here now? We need to be reminded of that a lot. Why did God put me here now? What good will my input do? And finally, can I listen and wait for God's help? These are the things that we are to be reminded of when we snap these little reminders. It's not all about me. Now, that's quite a lot of work to do. You know, we've got to do our discernment. We've got to figure out what's really going on with us. We need to repent, rinse, and repeat over and over. And we need to have constant reminders that our impact in the world matters. And that's what these are about. But then, once we've shunned the evils and we've got a daily regimen of spiritual practice to watch ourselves and figure out how we're doing, how do we go into the world and begin to do good? Well, I have this, which I'm calling it, this is the well bell. It's telling you all is well, all is well, and all manner of things shall be well. Before you activate any service project, any time when you are moving forward to help others, call yourself to prayer. Call yourself to prayer to be sure it's God's work that you're doing. Call yourself to reflection, maybe reminding yourself of all those things we talked about when you were busy shunning evils, so that when you are doing good, all the good you are doing is clear as it can be. And I was also wanted to mention that when we begin doing good, we should also pay attention to this little thing that I learned in California from my daughter-in-law, Megan, which is, in any situation, if you're starting to feel frustration, halt. And that stands for H-A-L-T. Are you hungry, angry, lonely, or tired? Anytime we are not our best in doing service, we should look about those practical things about ourselves too. Not simply what are my intentions and am I doing this well, but what other things in my personal state of being might be a hindrance to my being my best self. And in our doing good, I'd also like to recommend that you get yourself an internal journal. Internal journal instructions are: record daily progress of recognizing inner evils and choices to shun them. Record prayer requests and new awarenesses of the Lord's leading and guidance received in daily life. And third, record feelings and thoughts about process of regeneration, life, relationships, events, insights, and interests. Our internal journal helps keep us honest, and it helps keep us recognizing that we are on a path. All the good that we do that affects others affects us too, and we're going to have responses and reflections to that. This is an accessory item to the internal journal, and it's called the book remarker. So it's not just a bookmark, it's a book remarker, because you use this to keep place in any inspirational reading and jot down comments and responses to readings as you go along, used in conjunction with the internal journal. Our inspirational reading, whether it's biblical reading or reading of other texts of other countries or other teachings, is another way in which we keep the flow of love and wisdom open in us, because we open ourselves to other people's ways of doing things, and perhaps we'll find ways that will inspire us. And then the last thing in our little kit here is the Where Do I Fit Into Life puzzle. So the instructions here is to find a piece that reflects you, your shape, your color, your interests, your skills, your loves. And I don't know if all of you do puzzles the same way. I'm a sorter. I learned it from my mother, who learned it from her mother. I sort all the ones of similar colors together. So this is a way to find the adjoining pieces and connect them to one another. So in my life puzzle, as I understand myself as a piece in the puzzle, I may find others like myself who have similar interests or skills or loves, and we form a small group. And I'd like to say that I think that as we do a puzzle, we start to appreciate their beauty in it. And that's what we can appreciate in life, is the beauty of the small groups that we form around us that help us understand our own piece of the puzzle. And then we continue to add to these connections by color and shape. But then there's those people who want to do the edge first. Now, I think doing the edge first means that you just want to have an outline. You want to know the larger picture. And then you're willing to fill in the pieces and find where you fit. This is a different perspective, perhaps, but it's perfectly valid as well. Because we want to, in doing the puzzle of life, we find our own piece, we start to put pieces together, we find small groups that help us in our charity, and Lee's example of having group in the church say, I would love to do this, who else would like to join me? That's one piece of the puzzle, and there's three or four, five or six added on. They're starting to add on to make a bigger picture. And as the puzzle grows, we come to appreciate not just the beauty of the picture, but the complexity, and how all the many pieces of different shapes and different colors have come together. These are like the different goods and different services that we provide coming together within a community to provide for a wholeness, but that there are differences within this unity. And the advice for when you finish the puzzle is start a new puzzle, find a place in a new context. So we have many puzzles in life, not simply the one of the activities and interests that we're involved in now, but we might find, and this is, I think, representative of the midlife crisis, well, maybe I don't fit in that puzzle anymore. I have different skills and interests. I have different priorities. I want to find a new puzzle to be a part of. So these are some just kind of everyday things that made me think a lot about how we can look for help in daily life to make this work, to allow ourselves to find our highest service by being charity, living the faith that we know. I'm going to move the box for a minute because I do have one more thing to say somewhere under here. Oh, yes, it was to refer back to a word that George shared with us earlier in the week, because as I was listening to the lectures, I was trying to find a word that really spoke to me about how are we going to really do this in a moment-to-moment basis. And these are just some funny little tips of ways that we might think of it. But the word that struck me is the word considerateness. Considerateness really encapsulates everything that we need to know, because it starts with the word consider. Consider implies to think about and to ponder and to discern. Consider. Consider. When you're in a situation and you need to figure out what to do, consider. But the word considerate means we're actually thinking of the other person. We're thinking of their needs and wants. So I would just ask that we do the simplest of things as we move ahead, that we remember that we matter. Each one of us matters. And to remember to be considerate. And then maybe at the end of our lives, we'll be remembered and there will be stories told in memory of us for the ways in which we had simply been charity. This is the evidence of our faith, and I would say more primary and important than the highest of understandings, that we live this life of charity, that we keep open to understanding more about our faith as situations arise, but that we do as the road signs say, keep alert. The life you save may be your own. The floor is yours.
I know these rubber bands are supposed to help us remember things, but I've already forgotten what you called them.
Reminders.
Reminders.
Yes, they remind. They get you to think up here. What am I thinking right now? These are little reminders.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I happen to have five fingers and five members of my family, so that works
one
well.
One for each. Excellent.
Since you already have the suitcase packed, I was wondering how receptive you would be to taking a show on the road. This just seems to me, representing the youth, this is a wonderful retreat topic, and I think you've got, as usual, tons and tons of material that'll probably take me several weeks to process and sink in. But what a great weekend or week-long retreat topic, and how we could take each one of those items in your bag and probably take a good hour to discuss and have some open, sharing. Thank you.
As you said, the bag is packed, so we're all set.
One of my most popular sermons, which I didn't give a practical demonstration of in the pulpit, was one called Doing Dishes. I think I got more comments on that sermon than just about any other I've preached, and it was all about how doing dishes is your daily dishes. That's for those who don't have dishwashers, is a daily work expression of the internal cleaning that we need to do each day. Mm-hmm. And I went through that, and people loved it. Mm-hmm. I agree with Kurt. I think this is wonderful, and I hope you're able to enhance it and hone it and take it on the road here and there and share
Thanks.
It with others.
Thanks.
another question. That's something that was meaningful, but I didn't get it all at the time. You said you learned something from your daughter-in-law Megan about you know, waiting before we talking, which is something, you know, James talks about. And the you know, I got the
it's the
hungry and the angry and the tired, but
lonely.
Lonely. Uh huh.
Also, she did add an S at the end of it for halts, which is adding the word stressed, which sometimes is not exactly covered by the others.
I want to comment on the part about the baggage. Big deal, baggage. A lot of baggage carrying around. But I think you mentioned that sometimes we have to acknowledge that that's sort of defines us. Some of the baggage, it's not pretty. It's pretty mucky, but it is us, and we have to sort of own it, right?
Absolutely,
you
that's
can't
part of what
just
we look at.
Jettison it and say, "Oh, I'm not that anymore." I think it's always there,
right? I was just saying, this is our let's consciously pack this bag because we probably can't check the rest of it. We're probably forced to take it with us.
That's good,
Debbie.
I was just thinking about the whole baggage concept, and you could also have another suitcase there with the baggage that we don't want to look at, mm-hmm. or replace with what you've shown us. I mean, they do go hand in hand, mm-hmm. actually. You wouldn't really need another suitcase. Trying to get rid of some of that old baggage and replacing
right.
it with what you've given us
mm-hmm.
would be a very interesting thing to.
We just have to have a very safe group to unpack some of that old baggage.
True. Or be
but you're right.
General.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. Absolutely.
It would have to be x-rayed.
That's right. Studied for weaponry. That's right. George?
You know, one of the things that crossed my mind was that and it does make a connection with something that I can't quite recall in your talk, which I appreciated, that very often we find ourselves really dealing with leftovers. We come to a person in the checkout counter who is grumpy, and we're dealing with what's left over from something that happened before we got there. And what are we leaving for leftovers for somebody else to deal
yes.
with? Yeah, that was the part where it made the connection, that
mm-hmm.
the ripple effect.
That's right.
And we're dealing with a lot of other people's ripples.
That's right.
Sometimes, and it isn't us that mm-hmm. is causing the grump, and maybe we can leave some smoother waters for the next person that comes along.
Exactly, and that's a good reminder that no matter how we behave, there is the ripple effect, and it's not just the good that we do. And that positive attitude that can leave a larger impact than you ever know or imagine. Just to smile at someone who hasn't been smiled at all day can make a difference internally in them that, you know, for you it's like, oh, you know, well, I've smiled at everybody, no big deal. And, you know, that those little things make a huge difference to people who are living very difficult lives. And smoothing out a little bit of the water is a very kind and considerate thing to do.
Yeah, and an extreme again, the road rage and things like that,
mm-hmm.
too, dealing with leftovers,
right.
They can be fatal.
Right, and the point in that, I think, that particular situation is things can escalate so quickly when we're focused on the negative or the you know, I gotta get my way. They can escalate because egos are gonna fight. And you know, you don't see so much escalating. People aren't competing to smile bigger than each other. You know, they're going to make the smile connection, and that's great, but it's not a competition. It becomes very relaxed. It kind of diffuses the anxieties. Everybody tired now? Everybody want to go home? Unfortunately, most of us do. And most of it's got dirty laundry in it, I gotta tell you. But thank you so much for your kind attention this morning.